Welcome to Keep Making Movies, the podcast where we explore, shall we say, movies that may have needed a bigger budget. We evaluate the movie for what it is, decide if it could have been improved with a budget, and if it'll join our Keep Making Movies official recommend list. I'm your host, KJ, and with me is...
Tom.
Today we are discussing Galder Gaztelu Urrutia's The Platform. This is Gaztelu Urrutia's first and only feature-length film. In The Platform, we follow Goreng, played by Ivan Masog, as he tries to survive The Hole. The Hole is a hyper-fictional prison that is organized into 333 floors. The platform is filled with various type of food and starts on floor 1 and slowly makes its way down to floor 333. The people on the first few floors, the lower numbered hired floors, gets first dibs on the food, and more likely than not, there'll be no food as the platform gets lower and lower and lower. Every 30 days, the floor you're on changes. Goreng volunteers to be in the prison, not knowing exactly what it is before he gets there, and we watch him try to survive various floors. In the end, he takes a ride all the way down on the platform to the lowest floor and sends a child back up to send a message to the administration. Tom, what do you think the goals of the creator were?
Well, they're trying to create a modern allegory or parable. And you have, you know, the sort of modern allegory where the construction, I believe it is the Vertical Self-Management Center is the name of the organization that has made this thing. And it seems to be that they're trying to create an allegory about resource access and, you know, this term now, income inequality, that type of thing. And so it's an allegory about that and about the reasons as to why resources are captured or at the top or not distributed. There's some problems with the allegory, namely, we don't really, what they're allegorizing is not really showing why resources start at the top and don't get down to the bottom. They more or less show why resources aren't distributed from the middle down to the bottom. That seems to be the thing they're showing in their allegory. But that seems to be the nature of the allegory itself and the reason why sort of collective action fails. They want to seem to show that. That, I think, is the mission of the creators. And it's pretty obvious. I mean, that's, you know, maybe one of the problems with stretching an allegory over 92 minutes or however long this movie is that allegories tend to be pretty obvious. They need to be. And so they work very well in art, in pictures, in short stories that someone can tell in order to illustrate something. Over longer periods of time, they tend to be a little more difficult. I think this movie recognizes that and is trying to add in information or trying to expand the allegory to talk about other things. It gets a little muddled when it does that, but I think it is trying to bring in ideas of symbolic relevance and how religious attitudes can shape those sort of needs for the poor and things like that, as well as there's this thing with college education that's brought in a way that kind of actually made me laugh. I thought that was maybe one of the more clever things, but generally I think that was the goals of the creator.
I agree, Tom. I think there was this microcosm of an economic society. And dare I say it is capitalism that doesn't allow for upward or downward mobility, right? You're stuck on the floor you're on. You can go down, but you can't go down safely, which is a little strange, right? In a capitalist society, it's very easy to go down. And in a capitalist society, it's not necessarily easy to go up, but usually you either have an avenue to go up or there's an illusion of having an avenue to go up. Here, there's no chance you have of moving up the floors.
Well, you can move up the floors. They move up the floors. It's just random.
Oh, sorry. There's nothing you can do within a 30-day period to move up or down the floors.
Yeah, I think the idea is there's nothing, it's luck. I think that's what they're trying to point out.
But I want to start with any 30-day segment and
Okay.
say you can't move up and down.
Well, you can move down, you can't move up.
So even if you move down, you can't move down safely. I guess if you jump on the
Yes.
platform, you could move down safely. Okay, so there's a little, you can go down, but you can't go up, which is kind of one of the promises of capitalism is you are able to change your station if you work hard and gather capital, right? But here, you cannot go up, right? Even with the rope, they kind of try, but even that
Well,
fails us.
it fails. I mean, that's, I think, the point of the rope. There's one character who feels he can use the rope to climb up, and that immediately fails.
It immediately fails, and then you'd have to be lucky to be, I'll say, born with a rope, right? You only get to pick one item to bring in. That kind of represents a little bit of what you get when you're born, a little bit, I guess, to try to drag this allegory out. So I think one of the problems is you're stuck where you are. It's a caste system for 30 days, and then it shuffles, which you don't have any control over. So that's there's very few economies where every periodically you get placed in a much better or a much worse living condition.
Yeah, I mean, and this goes to the problem, I think, of the accuracy of the allegory, which is it's a problem. I mean, just to put my cards on the table, this is not the type of allegory that would normally speak to me, which is fine. I don't need a movie to justify my beliefs. I can just enjoy the movie or not. But it ends up becoming maybe a way of pointing holes in the critique of the film's critique of capitalism, which is easy to do. It's very easy to critique this movie's critique. I'm gonna try not to do that, just because in part I think it's very easy to do. But also I think it sort of sucks the fun or the potential fun out of this movie. And so I'm perfectly fine with going, okay, I don't think this critique of capitalism actually makes sense. As you were saying, KJ, like, you can go up. And, I think the point of the movie is you're lucky if you can go up. It's just luck that does it. But I'm kind of fine with going, okay, whatever, I roll. Let's see what you can do with the standard you've created.
All right, so let's do it. So we're looking at an allegory. How do you think they did with the money they had?
I actually think it looks good. I'm most of these movies, like the analogy we can make is to Cube, or the comparison we can make is to Cube, because there's similar constraints that they are, there's similar solutions to constraints in both Cube and this, which
Agreed, but there's
is,
a 20-year difference.
yeah, this movie's more recent than Cube.
Right. They have 20 years of technology and cheaper stuff to make movies with. Right. There's a lot of CG in this movie.
Yeah, and there's a lot of CG in this movie. It looks much better than Cube, but the constraints are somewhat the same in the sense of we're gonna or the imposed constraints are the same in the sense of can we make a movie that takes place in one room?
Yep. Right. With, yeah.
Right.
In Cube, you have 9 holes. Here, you got 2. So, yeah.
Yeah, it looks good. I think like the table looks good. The levitating floor. The levitating platform looks fine, like it works. I think it's edited really well. I think that those kind of montages in which we're getting in the dream, the sort of dreams of the main characters, the way things are superimposed, it can be very silly, but I think it does look nice. So I think with the money they had, they did pretty well. And I think the CG is not distracting. It's not used very much.
So I agree, it looks very good. The platform looks good. The food, whatever props they use for the food, it looked so gross in a good movie way. I thought that looked real good. I think a lot of this movie was CG, Tom, and I think it was pretty good CG. I think a lot when they look up and down, that's CG. They only had one room, yet they were often looking into other rooms.
Oh,
The
yeah.
platform was CG. I mean, I think all the stonework you see is a lot of CG.
Oh, really?
I have a feeling I mean, they might have had some foam stone stuff in there as well, but I think a lot of it was fixed or whatever with CG. It's a dark movie. It's not a lot of light. And I think that's one way you can, you know, use a budget to your advantage. And a lot of the movies on Keep Making Movies, I don't think we've seen a lot of dark movies, right? A lot of them have, like you should actually point out, they're usually overlit, not.
Yeah. Yeah, they usually are.
That felt like not a cheap trick, but it felt like a DC movie, like a Wonder Woman or something. They always end those movies in the dark, so it's cheaper.
Do you think that it's cheaper to make it darker, or is it that they're going for a particular style?
I think it's cheaper to make it darker, and then I think this is one of the few gory movies we've done. I think a lot of the gory movies are darker to aid with the gore, right? Mm-hmm. I think gore can be a little scarier. You don't have to see it, but it's a little darker around the gore, so it's, oh, what else is there? Like it adds a little
A little more mystery, I see.
Yeah, a little more fear. I mean, the red light looked good, you know, when it went red at night or whatever. I actually did not like how they kept cutting to his previous buddies as if they were in his head.
That's annoying. I think it looks fine, right? I don't think the editing looks hackney.
No.
I think the story is a bit hackney.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. The editing was good, but the narrative use of it was not my favorite.
Yeah, it's cheap. That's what it is. It's cheap because instead of seeing a character have to deal with conflict and kind of weigh the pros and cons, you have like a voice in his head pop up, and then we can see the voice in his head embodied in someone explaining the devil and the angel on the shoulders.
Yeah,
I mean it's a little bit, and that kind of thing could be fun if the movie wasn't so self-serious,
right?
Which is the biggest problem with this movie. Is that it is damn serious about what it is doing.
It is similar to Snowpiercer. I got a lot of Snowpiercer vibes in this movie. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I think if they went silly, I think maybe the whole thing falls apart in a different way.
I don't know. I would. So one thing I kept thinking of was like the difference between this and absurdist things. So Samuel Beckett came to mind when watching this, and not because this is working in the same vein that Beckett worked in, but we'll explain. So Samuel Beckett is kind of making observations about the absurdity of the modern world, but all of his stuff, even though it's really about how the modern world offers us no real narrative or explanation for our lives, all of Samuel Beckett's stuff is really funny. Like it's all like Irish comedy. That's how he gets at it. He gets at something kind of terrifying and existentially dreadful by having two guys kind of like joke around a little bit. Like he was trying to write Lionel and Hardy bits. That's who he imagined as playing his main characters in Waiting for Godot. And so you end up really, and if you've ever seen Samuel Beckett staged with really good actors, I saw Ian McClellan and Patrick Stewart working together on one of them.
Wow.
It's hilarious. And it's, I mean, when you think about the play, they're terrifying, but that watching two good actors go at it, it's hilarious. And I saw the potential for that in the beginning of this, when they're talking about the word, obviously. In the first cell, our two characters are having an argument, and not so much an argument, but one character likes the word, obviously. And when the other character uses it, he says, don't use my word. That's my word. Now, that could be potentially really funny.
Yeah.
But they don't do anything with it. And part of the problem is the characters in that scene are kind of in on the joke. They're like, yeah, that's my word, obviously. As opposed to being two people who take that really seriously. Mm-hmm. Like, no, that's my word. No, that's not you. You don't have a right to that word. I'm going to say obviously. And get into and about it would have been hilarious to watch these two people argue about the use of this word. But the movie can't give us that, because this, we're talking about income inequality. And when you talk about that, you lower your voice and get very serious, and that's a huge problem in this movie, which it could have been hilarious. Like, there's opportunity for comedy throughout.
Abbott and Costello in Kefka's The Platform.
But that's the thing, like Kafka is also really funny. Like that, and I think Orson Welles in his version of The Trial, which we talked about in a separate podcast, in Adapt It, go subscribe, like, comment, he gets at the comedy, right? But Kafka's work is terrifying when you think about it. Now the difference here is that this isn't an absurdist piece. It's not saying that the world has no real meaning and that we should be filled with existential dread about what our lives mean. So there's a difference in genre and intention with The Platform. But still, the lesson, I think, is with things like this, is that being super serious about something like this just doesn't work really well. And having like really low lighting, especially the gore doesn't work at all. I don't know. I know you didn't like it. I didn't like it at all.
No, I don't like the gore. Although I liked Miharu as a character, the woman who's searching for her kid.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah.
I liked her a lot. And she's a little bit of a superhero that she can traverse these, I guess. So she actually goes down often. So she does ride the platform down, but she has to fight and kill almost every level or every few levels, or else she's going to get eaten at the lower ones. So I don't really know how she's surviving. So she's got a little bit of a superhero thing going on. But I thought her story was good. I don't think it could be carried in a 90-minute movie. But her story of she has a kid here and she's every 30 days trying to find them and protect them and keep them fed as well as she can. I like that narrative.
I like the suggestion of her. The problem is it's a gun that doesn't get fired. Right, we get her as this sort of avenging angel type, or this protector in certain cases. She protects our main character at one point. She saves his life, basically, at one point. We don't entirely know why she saves his life, but she does.
Well, in the scene before, he's kind to her, although she's too far away to know that. Mm-hmm. So there was a little bit of disconnect there. And when she saves his life, I think that is the gun being fired. It's just fired at the very beginning of the second act instead of in the third act, so it feels off.
It feels off, but what ends up happening to her is she eventually just gets killed.
Right.
Right, she just gets randomly killed. So we end up having, when she saves his life, that seemed to me that connection between them. Okay, now this is a person. This person is in our main character's life. She's going to play a role now. And she gets just brushed aside. They don't do anything with her, right? And so she's a really interesting, the only thing we learn about her after that is that actually when she came into the Vertical Management Society, or whatever it's called, what we learn is that she actually didn't have a kid when she came in.
But that turned out to be wrong, because I think at the end that was her kid.
Maybe. The stuff with the kid at the end is interesting.
Well, I guess everything. So at one point we meet the character who works there, brings her dog there, my gosh, and gives us and the main character tons of information. Most of it turns out to be wrong. She doesn't know how many levels there are. She doesn't know a
That's
lot.
That's true.
So yeah. I had assumed that was her kid, because most of the information that lady told us turned out to not be true.
Mm-hmm.
And I included that she was wrong about Miharu.
But then what is that doing in there?
Well, let's jump into the would a budget have helped this movie? Because I have an idea that might answer a lot of these questions.
Okay,
so, Tom,
fair
do
enough.
You think a budget would have helped this movie?
No, because I think if you made this more Hollywood, right, a budget pushes it closer to L.A., so to speak, then it gets more serious. It gets more like Snowpiercer, which is the direction you don't want to go with this. You want to go in the, like,
Cube.
You don't want to go Cube, because Cube is camp, right? And maybe Cube isn't quite camp. It's campier. And maybe that would have been fine. I think the direction to go with this is, even though it's not necessarily an absurdist piece, because it isn't about the meaninglessness of life, it's about social problems. I think borrowing from the absurdists and bringing in some comedy is the direction to go in. And I don't think more money would inspire that, right? Because I think people would be like, no, this is a serious allegory we're telling about income inequality. We can't have jokes in here. That would be taking it lightly, or something like that. So I actually think No, money wouldn't have helped. What you just need is jokes. You need a little sense of levity.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think a budget would have helped. I think they did a lot with the one room and the platform, right? A cube did a lot too. However, the platform felt like they had the idea. I can imagine they're sitting at Starbucks. They're like, man, what if we made a movie where there was this platform? It was full of food and it comes down on each floor just like eats so much. And you know, the people at the bottom, they never get any, right? And they're like, yeah, okay, now we need a plot. And the movie kept me going the whole time. I always wanted to know what was next, even on my second watch. But I think they ran out of things to do. I think Miharu worked. I think that microcosm worked. The guy with the knife, okay, fine. But then when you get to the lady with the dog, it's a little strange. The kid's a little strange. The guy on fire, like they're starting to do things that expanding how the platform worked or expanding the room or giving the character some control of what he could do right at the end. I mean, I guess it's go down the platform and come back up, but it felt like they needed to expand the room or they needed to expand something. I think they got stuck in the room. I don't think this would have worked as a short. I think if it was a short, you wouldn't have spent enough time in the prison to appreciate the desperation. But I think they needed to expand in a direction.
Yeah, I think this ends up becoming a bit of a problem. I think you're right. And I think they are attempting to expand in it, but I don't think all of it connects. So you end up having the sort of barbarism of the oppressed, right? What ends up happening is under this criticism, the poor ends up eating each other. Right, so that
Yeah,
they
literally.
and yeah, literally, in this film, that they're really not looking upward to the people who are responsible for their oppression. They're looking at one another, and as soon as you have a chance to, at one point, literally urinate on someone who's just slightly below you, you'll take that opportunity merely for a chuckle. So that's part of it, and so it seems to be. The revolution, so to speak, has to be a revolution in thinking, in which these two characters, our main character and then an African character he meets in room on level five, I think.
Six, I think it's
Level
six, yeah.
six. Okay. On level six, that initially that character who seems to be somewhat religious is going to rise up. And then he can't. And so what they decide to do is have this kind of revolution where they forcefully distribute just enough food for everyone. That revolution seems to fail because what it doesn't take into account is the people at the top who are setting the problem in motion. And so they meet a
Well,
teacher.
and they also don't realize how big the bottom is.
They also don't know how large it is. That's true.
And right, and that's another part of the allegory is right, it's hard. The bottom can be surprisingly big.
Yeah, that they don't know how much resources they have. But while it's going down, they meet a teacher, and the teacher says, the fight is not merely the redistribution, it is a symbolic fight. You have to send a message. And so they have this dessert, this very fancy dessert, and they're like, we're not going to eat it. We're going to, because the platform goes back up so that the food.
The panna cotta.
Yeah, the panna
It's so
cotta.
silly.
It's
It's
really,
so, oh my gosh.
and this is the problem with tone. If it was a, ju if the movie was a comedy, that would have been
It would have
brilliant.
worked. Yep.
Yes. But since it's serious, since it's, we're going to protect this panna cotta with our lives, and we're supposed to take this seriously. It becomes stupid. But anyway, so that becomes part of it. No, it has to be a symbolic fight. And then that eventually kind of fails. They manage to get to the bottom. They've gotten the crap beat out of them. And they get all the way down to floor 333, where there is a seemingly perfectly healthy little girl who looks like that one woman who was looking for her child.
Yep, Miharu.
and they give her the panna cotta And then they decide she's the symbol. And so they're going to send her back up.
Right, which the only connection I can make is that one woman said, no, there's no children here. If she pops up, right, the only chance of this actually working is she pops up, somebody who's on in the administration, but is pretty low level if they're actually putting stuff on the platform, is like, oh, crap, there are actually kids here. I'm being lied to. I'm going to act normal until I can rise high enough to stop this. Like, I still, even if they sent up to Panacota, they'd be like, oh, that's weird. Right? That's not going to, what symbol?
Well, I think this is where it's kind of part of the problem of the allegory. I think it ends up all being allegorical, right? Because if you can send that dessert up, it's a message of resistance. And that will, once you realize the poor is resisting, then you'll be afraid or something.
Something, of course, right? Because the only people that are going to see it are the people who load and unload the platform.
Yeah, it doesn't. The problem with an allegory, it needs to have both literal and metaphorical meaning lined up. So if they see the panna cotta and they're like, oh no, the poor are not eating the panna cotta, it doesn't.
I guess the guy that likes panna cotta died, right? Because they all get to pick the food they want on there.
Yeah. So the literal meaning falls apart. And I think what they're doing with the little girl, and especially with the 333, the sort of Trinitarian religious.
Well, I think that is, there's two people on a floor, so there's 666 was how I interpreted the 333 was two people on a floor.
And she's alone.
Right. Which then, was there not two people on her floor? Did that other person die already?
I thought it was she's alone and she's a 333. So it's the holy number, right? Three is a holy number.
Oh.
And so I thought she was sort of supposed to be a sort of delivering figure.
I got it. I was getting right into the devil side, not the God side. Okay.
Oh, no, I think she's supposed to be the delivering figure. So eventually it ends up becoming a messianic story that she becomes the Messiah that's going to liberate them all. Now, again, the problem with allegory.
Does that make Goreng John the Baptist or something?
Something like that, yeah. I mean, this ends up being kind of the problem, is that it doesn't work literally. It might work metaphorically, and I think we could put these pieces together and say, eventually, revolutions go through stages. They go through the let's redistribute. Well, that doesn't work because nobody has a story to follow. So we'll create a story. We'll have a symbol. Well, that doesn't work. We need something transcendental. You can't have something of this earth. We need something beyond this earth. And so we find a sort of religion that, or we rephrase our revolution in terms of this religion. And so then you have this messianic figure who offers a sort of metaphysical context for your revolution, and therefore there can be an actual physical revolution that changes things, right? That, I think, is what's going on there. And 333 is also these kind of references to the when God reveals the promised land in the Bible and or instructs people to go to the promised land, etc. I mean, I don't think that needs to necessarily be there. I think it's just the fact that it's three threes is enough to signify holiness. That's what I think is going on. But as you're saying, like, what is the little girl going to do? They're just going to take her away and
what if the put her back in, right? Yeah, she's in there for some reason. Like,
somehow she got in. And this is the problem, is that if you have a short allegory, like a 10-minute film, maybe that could work because it's mysterious enough to work. If you have an absurdist film, where it's not an exact, it's kind of an allegory, but it's also absurdist, you just say, well, it's absurd. It's ridiculous. Instead, you have this movie, which is sort of in between, where the literal world just doesn't work, right? It kind of doesn't make any sense. I mean, people get college degrees for being in there for a month. That is also right. Part of it.
Yeah.
Which is why he goes in, because he could get an accredited degree if he stays in for 30 days. Right. That's the, is it?
Yeah.
30
or
days?
I think it's six sets of 30 days, 6 months.
Oh, okay.
They're on each floor for 30 days.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't remember how long it takes people in a Basque region of Spain to get an accredited degree in a horror prison. But It's it. I guess, you know, I guess it's not that long. Yeah, and so that ends up being a problem. So I think you're right. I think the literal side of the allegory falls apart. I think the tone doesn't work. I think the gore is weird. I mean, it's there's the dog gets killed by the
Shamari,
descending
yeah.
woman. But I don't know, like, are they going to eat the dog? Is that the idea?
So the poor dog, right, gets brought in, and at one point it's on the platform, and our two characters there are
I thought,
distracted, and we're
yeah.
thinking it's going to go down and get eaten that way, which would have been terrible. And then instead, Himaru comes down and or Miharu comes down and kills the dog. So I think it was just supposed to add tension and gore to the movie. It was the only thing I could think of. It was supposed to be like, oh no, and then that dog, like gives us something to talk about afterwards, like. Wait till you get to the part with the dog, man. Like it, like one of these.
Things, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I found the whole thing really irritating. I have a special hatred for any film director who shows violence to dogs or
Dogs.
cats.
So with that in mind, does this make the keep making movies recommend list for you, Tom?
Oh, it's I don't like this movie for the reasons we just pointed out, but it is such one of these movies, right? It is like if Cube makes the list, this kind of has to make the list. I guess the difference would be there is no campy fun. Cube can be fun and kind of campy, and even what was it, Infinity Chamber that we did in Talking Pictures Trivia?
Trivia. Yep.
Yeah, that also had a kind of sort of the same thing, a single room movie that also had a little bit of camp and fun to it, and what have you, and a bit of a puzzle to it too. So you know what? I'm gonna actually say no, because I'm gonna say it is in the genre, but it's kind of pessimistic spirit and its violence and its inability to enjoy the concept that it came up with makes it a no.
It's a no for me too. The gore is really hard for me to overcome. So it's a no as a keep making movie recommend. But you know, of the movies we do, this might be one of the first ones I recommend. You know, after Beyond the Infinite 2 Minutes, River, Summertime Machine Blue. Like this is as a movie, like you were saying, it's pretty well shot, pretty well made. The special effects look good, everything. But I it's a no for me on the keep making movies list because of the gore and because I think they try to turn the gore up to 11 sometimes with the dog cutting his leg. Some of the deaths are just gruesome and ugly.
Yeah, it's an ugly movie. It is an ugly movie. Yeah, I agree. And especially after like The River too. God, The River was so much
Yes, right? Just makes me
fun.
so happy.
Yeah, I
So
know.
it's official. The platform has not made the list. Gatelu Urotia hasn't made any more movies. He's produced some, but he hasn't directed any. So maybe we'll check out one of the ones he's produced. Otherwise, keep making movies. And we'll check it out. Audience, if you've seen any of his others that he produced, let us know on social media.
You can rate and review this show anywhere fine podcasts are available. For those viewing in YouTube land, if you haven't already, please like this video, subscribe to the Talking Studios channel for all our exciting content, and follow us on social media at Talking Studios. Check out other shows by Talking Studios, including Talking Pictures Trivia, where we explore movies through trivia, Limited Lexicon, where we play through text-based adventure games, Get the Point, where we slowly reveal a movie poster and try to guess which movie poster it is, and Adapt It, where we explore adaptations in various forms. Got a question for us? Call the Talking Studios hotline at 201 467-8679 and leave a message. It may be featured on a future episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Keep Making Movies wherever fine podcasts are found.
Join us next time when we discuss One Cut of the Dead from 2019. Audience, do not read about this movie. Just go watch it and watch the whole thing. Don't quit. Keep watching. And don't read anything about it. Stay tuned for our first impressions of One Cut of the Dead. Next week, we'll be discussing One Cut of the Dead, but we're not doing first impressions, audience. Don't look anything up. Go watch the movie. It's wonderful. I can't risk Tom saying something. I can't risk me saying something. It's a zombie movie, but don't worry. The Collingswood story was way scarier than One Cut of the Dead, and the Collingswood story was not scary. There's fake blood, and it's fake. It's incredibly fake.
Watch it with your family.
You can say that. You can watch it with your family. I did. Oh, no first impressions. One Cut of the Dead is available on AMC Plus at the time of this recording.
Wow, Talking Studios.
Galder Gaztelu Urrutia. How do you feel about that?
That sounds good. I think it's a Basque name, so I don't even think it's Spanish.
What's Basque?
Basque is a people that are in southern Spain and in France, and it's a really interesting language. It's pre-Proto-Indo-European.
Like Moroccan?
No, it's not like Moroccan. It's a language Europe before Indo-Europeans came in. So before pre 50,000 years ago.
Okay, I'll try that accent then.
That wasn't helpful. It's fascinating because